You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone.
Welcome to Ben Remmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Remmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely, fucking sexy ass, yummy, gay co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Hey, y'all. Today's guest is iconic stage and screen star Nathan Lee Graham.
Nathan Lee Graham is familiar to television audiences for his eminently memorable roles on series as The Comeback, LA to Vegas, Absolutely Fabulous, and the newest CW hit, Katie Keene. And of course, he was unforgettable as Todd in the camp classic Zoolander.
On Broadway, Nathan created the roles of Misunderstanding and Priscilla Queen of the Desert, and Phil Darmano in The Wild Party.
Uptown is looking more like downtown, which is looking more like
he
uptown.
He doesn't know the song, so he's doing a bad Ben Remmelauer impression.
The brothers Darmano have a ticklish treat, a delightful little ditty with a hot new beat. Uptown is looking more like downtown, which is looking more like uptown every day. Black folks are sounding more like white folks, who are sounding more like black folks in every way. Martha Graham and E.B. White got wet with Ethel Waters. While Langston Hughes pretends he's one of Mrs. Astor's daughters. Ha! Uptown is looking more like downtown, which is looking more like uptown every day.
Nathan is coming in to chat about Lena Horne, the lady and her music, the live recording of her long-running autobiographical theatrical concert on Broadway.
Here we go. My Uncle Mitchell gave me a DVD of it, and I'm obsessed. It's so great. She's so great.
Okay. That was a failed experiment. What are you doing?
It's rolling. Calm down. It's still rolling.
I didn't want to do it all again.
I know.
I said it was failed. I didn't say we needed to fix it.
Just because it's failed doesn't mean we're doing more work.
If I corrected every failure, you think I'd be... Was that your elbow?
No.
Oh, what did I knock?
Mm-hmm. Don't knock until you tried it.
Something hard.
So let's go in deep. First of all, let's talk about Nathan, because we think he should be MAME, as we tell him on the pod, the interview, which we haven't done yet, but we will do.
You just have a way of knowing things.
But speaking of that, you've been continuing on your MAME journey.
Yes, I have. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, so tell me about that. Fill me in.
Well, I have just been, like, so into MAME. I've been spending some time traveling for work stuff, where I've just been basically had hours and hours and hours alone to myself on the road, and sometimes without heaven forfend TV. It's been wonderful for me because I've done a lot of reading and writing and that kind of stuff, you know, like people did back in the days before television, and listening to music. But one of the things that I read, as I mentioned, was the novel Anti-Mame.
Right.
Which I got so into. I think maybe kind of like being lonely on the road away from Daniel. Mm. You know, I feel very at home, like, in when I'm, like, lost in the world of Anti-Mame that Patrick Dennis created so vividly. And I feel like Mame and Vera and...
Gooch.
And Patrick, you know, I feel like they're my friends. They're, like, my family. And I continue to feel that way, not only reading Anti-Mame, but reading the sequel to it, Around the World with Anti-Mame. Mm. And then reading... I read a biography, a wonderful biography by Eric Myers about Patrick Dennis called Uncle Mame. And I read this book called Uncle Mame. This book called But Darling, I'm Your Auntie Mame that chats the history of the character through the different incarnations.
Charts the history.
Well, it chats it to me.
We're chatting
now.
I
feel alone when I'm reading it, so it's chatting to me. And now I'm reading the script of the musical, and
I want to
read the play, but that didn't come in the mail yet. I actually had a copy of the musical and a copy of the play, but they're both used, and the copy I had of the play, they both have, like, weird, funny, like, handwritten notes in them.
Little commentary.
Like, the one from the musical is really, like they deleted the word lesbian. They crossed out the word lesbian, and, like, they changed the word bastard to buzzard, and, like, all these weird little, like, edit, like, censorship things.
So weird.
And,
I'll kill you, buzzard, try any of that.
Even, at least you can see what's underneath. The other one has, like, 20 or 30 pages ripped out. Like, I think they might have been, like, just, like, running that scene, and they were like, "Ah, oh, fuck this book. I'm never gonna, like, sell it to a used
book
store."
I just need these sides.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe they fell out. So anyway, my copy is, like, grossly incomplete. But I'm fascinated by how the thing was, and I've also been, like, watching and rewatching both the movie of Anti-Mame with Ross Russell.
Oh, that one, yeah.
The musical. I only watched Lucy once, but I sat through the whole thing once, which is more than I can say for anyone else.
More than I can say for me. But the Ross Russell movie is so good.
Oh, fabulous to watch and rewatch. Good. But it's interesting because the screenplay was written by Comden and Green.
Really?
So it is
probably
out of legal necessity, if nothing else. It's rather different from the play.
Yeah. I didn't know that. That's great.
Also not that different. But anyway, I'm just so into all of it. And I just love to go be in that world. And I've been listening to so much Mame, there's not that much Mame to listen to because there's the original cast album and then there's the worthless movie soundtrack, as I was telling Daniel. I mean, even though it's great to have another recording of B and another recording of Jane Connell. And Robert Preston is, you know, as good a Beauregard as ever, if not the best ever, maybe the best ever. He gets that song, Loving You, which is very pretty. Mm. But Lucy's worse than she seems. Like, when you watch the movie, you're like, God, she's terrible. But, like, it's still Lucy, and, like, you don't love it, but, like, you can sort of... Like, the movie is worse than she is in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But like, I've had it on my playlist now, and, like, something will come up of her being like, light the candle, get the ice out, roll the rug up, it's today.
It's
like, it makes you want to just, like, kill yourself. Which is really sad
is
because most
of
Mame is
today.
The opposite. And
thank you can give.
But
me.
I've gotten way deeper than that. I've gone into, like, I'm getting into all these, like, Herb Alpert, Tijuana Brass, Louis Armstrong, Liberace, Regis Philbin, anybody singing the title song, and of course Edie Gourmet and everybody and their mother singing If He Walked Into My Life.
Right.
And
I mean, I'm sure Marilyn's on there a lot.
I just love it. And I just want all Mame all the time. It's just making me so happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm really appreciating songs in Mame I never cared for before.
Well,
I always hated That's How Young I Feel.
Mm.
And now, like, I'm like, I have a feeling that time is halted. I'm craving that chocolate malted.
You're putting it in your show.
Putting it in my show. But no, but the one I'm really into now, which I wasn't that into before, is Open a New Window.
Yes.
And
uh-huh.
I still see why I was mad at it, because I feel like it's a little bit...
It's a little like... Dun, bada, bum, bum.
It feels very like Rodgers and Hammerstein at their worst. Sound of Music. It feels much more Sound of Music
like
than
with
Mame.
The kids.
Feels like super like raindrops on roses and whiskers on
kittens. It's like what Marilyn May describes as like marching around the breakfast table music.
It's very marching around the breakfast table. And it's so not Ross Russell.
Right.
And like, I it's so like why I'm like you know, it feels like not even Mary Poppins, but like Bed Knobs and Broomstick, appropriately so.
Right.
But,
it's very that.
But I still just kind of love it.
You have to.
And
I mean, it's that Jerry Herman.
And like also song. Very like in that place that I don't like is like We Need a Little Christmas. Although of course you have to give it to him because he wrote a fucking like Christmas standard. Like
yes,
may
yes.
the Lord smite us all with such a fate. You
every
know?
Year Angela Lansbury is played on like mainstream radio. You
yeah,
can't
like you know you
it.
Can't complain. But like you don't necessarily like want to listen to it.
Right, sure.
But like I kind of want to listen to it.
I mean, listen. We just saw. I mean. I know we're not talking about this, but we just saw Mac
I
and
really
Mabel.
Love the, like, instrumental versions that are, like, you can, like, forget it's a Christmas song for a minute and just let it, like, tug at your, like, Hebrew soul.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, we just saw Mac and Mabel at City Center.
Yeah, we did.
And it really is, I mean, we knew this, but it really did hit home to me just how Jerry Herman musicals, there's a real template to
a little too much of a template.
A little too much. But it's like
although we saw how I've always thought that listening to Mac and Mabel, a track that I probably listened to least of all was when Mabel comes into the room.
Yes. But that's very like the Hello Dolly.
And look, no, exactly. And I was like so like fucking come on, Jerry.
I mean,
it ain't
the
moment. It's not the time or the place.
Right.
You know. And but seeing the show, you're not mad at that song. Like
not
you're
song.
Pretty happy when that song happens.
It's the second act, Hello Dolly number or Maine.
But
or,
like but not in a badly formulated
no,
way.
Not
like,
a,
in the show it actually works. Like
yeah.
What doesn't work for me in the show is the fact that we spend an awful lot of time and maybe it worked better when it was Robert Preston, no offense to Doug Sills, who was great,
right.
But maybe when it's Robert Preston and you're just, like, so fucking happy to, like, see him do anything and, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, you kind of wish you were still at the Music Man, so you'll take
right,
it.
Right.
But, like, the songs he sings,
about,
okay,
like,
so he sings Movies Were Movies, where he's like, this is what used to be great about movies, this is, like, what was
right,
great.
Right, right.
Then the rest of the plot is moving along, and he's like,
oh,
Roman
also,
numeral one about what makes my kind of movies great
right.
is that they have laughs.
Right.
And then he has another song that's you know, like Roman numeral two, and it's about we're gonna like fill it with hundreds of girls. And then there's Roman numeral three when he sings, which is, by the way, surprised they got away with this. Like every time a cop falls down, my heart leaps up. Heart
right.
leaps up.
Heart leaps up.
this reminds me of Nancy Anderson, who's by the way so wonderful in Charles Bush's play.
Mm.
What is it? The Confessions of
Lily Dare, yeah. Which we talk about before Drew Drogi episode. Listen
yes.
to that.
But Nancy, when there was a scene that was cut from a class act. Here's a little mm. musical theater trivia.
Oh.
Cut in previews off Broadway, I think. Which was right before the Act 1 finale, which was when Ed Kleban is writing additional material out of town for the musical Irene, starring Debbie Reynolds.
Ooh,
although they
okay.
didn't. No, I think they did identify it as that.
Yeah.
And I think he gets fired, actually, which is why I think Wally Harper went on
mm-hmm,
to write
mm-hmm.
songs. But anyway, he's writing stuff, and there was a scene that was cut from... So when he's having a hard time on that production,
mm-hmm.
Then his best friend Sophie, played by Randy Graff, has come to visit him in Toronto, which is, I think, where they're supposedly trying out of town. And she sings this great Kleban song, Follow Your Star,
mm-hmm.
to inspire him. It's the end of Act One. But there was a scene that came before that in maybe it was always in the show. No, I feel like it was cut. But where we supposedly saw him working on this show with this nightmare star. And Nancy Anderson got to play that Debbie Reynolds character.
Uh-huh.
But she didn't do a Debbie Reynolds impression, at least I don't think. But I just remember the character who was supposed to be based on John Gielgud, the troubled director mm. of the show, was named Nick. Mm-hmm. And so they were rehearsing a number. And Nancy, as this Debbie Reynolds character, had to stop it and be like, Nick! We can't work like that. And she didn't say the consonants at the end of the words. I don't know why, but it was so
like
fucking funny. I'll never stop thinking about it.
That's really funny.
It was so fucking brilliant. She's so funny and talented. But she was like, Nick, we can't work like that. It was so good. Anyway, that's what I just was channeling unintentionally.
What are we talking about? How did
Oh, so MAME.
Okay.
So I was saying, You can't say what every time a cop falls down, my heart leaps up. But that's what's so crazy, because that to me is no question what's wrong with Mac and Mabel. People like to say, well, you don't care about him, or you don't care about her, or you don't care about them in the end, or whatever.
Right.
But like, or it was too dark for a Jerry Herman musical, or it was too old fashioned for the time period. But no, what's wrong with it is that this lead character has a good opening number that sets up who he is. I want to make the world... Movies were movies. Right. Oh, excuse me, I forgot. Movies were movies. And then... But then he has three more songs that are not about the story of the show.
But movies are movies just, doesn't happen until, like 10, 15 minutes in.
Okay, fine. But that is fixable with a scissor. But, like... And I don't... There's shows that make you wait for the opening number. I think movies were movies... pays off enough that maybe it's worth the wait, you know? But that's not the point.
Right.
The point is, like, he has three full songs that take up a very large chunk of time in the show that are just him rehashing in greater detail what's wrong with the movies he sees.
Yeah.
Or what he believes should be in movies.
Right.
And that's not what the show is about.
Right, right.
And it doesn't even have, like, one of those, like, well, it's echoes of what the show... Yes, okay, the show is about the shifting fashions in Hollywood and entertainment and how that his career was going to become obsolete, or she became obsolete, whatever. But that's just the context for their lives. That's not what the show's about. And it's those songs, and in Sondheim would never have written... This is, like, what's wrong with Jerry Herman, is that there's, like, three songs that are just, like... They're like, what might be on Mac's mind? But, like, they're not dramatic songs. I mean,
serving the message.
But even Oscar Hammerstein wouldn't have done that. Like, they don't move the story forward.
Right,
like, they're
right,
just
right,
like
right.
him. They're like, just for, I don't know. They're, to me, they're like a real problem. And that's what's wrong with Mac and Mabel,
right.
If I may.
You may.
The other thought I've had dramaturgically about Jerry Herman.
Just when I thought we were done.
No, because I've always wondered, like, how do you get those Merman songs into Hello Dolly?
Wait, what?
Because Merman had those extra two songs that she got to sing
so
in Hello Dolly.
Oh, so you're wanting to put the... Which were they?
Well, there's the great one, World Take Me Back. The world is full of beautiful things. World, take me back again. Whatever. And then she has that ballad, Love, Look Through My Window. I don't know, whatever. It's not that great. It's like, it reminds me very much of the not that great ballad that Angela had cut from Mame and was later put into the movie of Dolly for Barbara, Love is Only Love.
Oh, I didn't realize that was where that was from.
So Dolly, Barbara's Dolly ballad, Love is Only Love, is not the same as Merman's Dolly ballad, Love, Look Through My Window.
Right.
But they're both nice. They're pretty. But anyway, I think you can get them both, because I think you put, which I guess is probably where they actually came. I believe Love, Look Through My Window comes right before the parade passes by.
Mm.
It has the monologue with the oak leaf?
The oak leaf, yeah, in the Bible.
And then, like, Barbara would touch a leaf.
Like, Barbara
the coronavirus.
Would a Bible.
She needs Mayor Mike to save her. I'm going to call him Mayor Mike.
Mayor Mike. Wait. Do Barbara with coronavirus.
No, Daniel. You shouldn't touch that leaf because it might have corona. Here, use this hand sanitizer and
Renata,
kill yourself. I'm making
Renata.
Her sound like Bernie Sanders. Barbara's just
opposite.
Bernie Sanders on Valium.
Barbara's Bernie Sanders with, like, way too much money. She's like Bernie Sanders with Mayor Mike's.
Anyway, I don't know. I don't know where World Take Me Back went, and I want to find out. But in my mind, it should be the Act Two opening. Like, for real, should be the Act Two opening. Like, why doesn't Act Two of Hello Dolly start with World Take Me Back?
I feel like I'm so drunk right now. I'm not drunk at all, but, like, I have no idea what we're talking about. It's, like, so all over the place. I'm just like, wait a second. I'm, like, trying, like...
We should not have taken that Molly before we did
this. We should fucking not
have taken it. I'm just kidding. The only Molly I'm taking is Pope.
Honey.
Molly Pope.
Honey. And I feel crazy enough when I'm on Molly Pope.
Well, in all fairness, I feel way crazier on Molly Pope as most people would.
Totally.
MDMA.
Totally. I went and saw Molly Show the other night. I did not see one last night, which I wish I would have, because I want to see her as much as Poss.
Me too. I'm
but
really sad I missed both.
I did see her first night at the Duplex with Drew Woodke, and it was so fabulous. And glad she's, you know, making her way down that staircase again. Anyway, this is not about Molly Pope. 5% battery.
Maybe that's the universe's way of telling us.
Has to dial it on down. Well, okay, let's still going. Well, what else do we need to talk about?
I've said this before.
Okay.
No need to say it again.
What? I shudder to ask.
Because, you know, I'm talking about who should play Mame.
Yeah, we definitely
talked about
this.
An idea I've never said on the pod, but I've said it years before in my life, and then I let go of it when I had my new ideas about On the Gas Iron stuff. But now that I've taken a dive into Mame, and I've talked about this Roz Russell thing where she has to be like, you know, where she's like, oh, Mame, I'll positively be holding my breath until tomorrow morning. And Mame's like, do that, honey.
You know? So Marilyn.
Like, but it's like, but this, you know, that thing where it's kind of a dig, but yeah, it's like on the surface.
It's nice. Like shade.
Right, exactly. So I was like, who could do it, who could do it? And it made me realize one of my original thoughts for Mame might actually be the right one after all. And that is Jane Lynch.
Ooh, that's fascinating.
Jane Lynch,
she'd
y'all
be good, but I do you think she's like,
and everyone
a
wants
star
to say she's a Vera. Well, oh.
I mean, I'm
you
just
said
saying
the S word.
I'm just saying.
Well, she has a hit TV show.
Glee?
No, the game show thingy.
What is that? I don't
Hollywood
know
Game
that.
Night.
It's not a, maybe it's not a thing.
And it's like in its like it fifth season.
Is it on like mainstream TV network?
It's on network TV. Yeah,
well,
your
that's
people's
why I don't know about it.
TV. Wait, let me look
my
it up.
People, what is that supposed to mean? Huh?
Non-Jews from the provinces.
No, that's
are you Jewish?
I'm from the province town.
Are you from the provinces?
I do not have network TV. I've never had network TV.
What do you mean had? We all network TV is free for the people. It's the everyone has network TV.
Not I.
Yeah,
not
you
I,
do.
Sir.
Yeah.
I don't have any kind of cable running to
you
my
You just
TV.
Need a wire hanger.
I don't even have that. No wire hangers. Ever.
Wait, what am I looking up? Oh, Hollywood Game Night. Can you just sing the song
anyway,
from Mame while I look this
open
up?
Open a new window, open a new door.
Oh, another song that I'm loving, just mostly because I'm so obsessed with the title song, is I think it's the Act Two opening of Mame, which is the letter. I think it's called the letter that Patrick writes her while she's on her like 8-year honeymoon. Because like the first thing, it's to the tune of Mame, although they don't. He's like, I got a B+ in English lit, but there's no like.
Oh yeah.
And then it like skips ahead to like old Patrick, like Max von Essen Patrick, and he's very like the Debs all seem to go for me.
The Debs, oh, like the debutantes. Yeah. I was like Reynolds, Gravett.
Reynolds and Gravett. Really?
Wait, who else? Who else is a Deb? Mazer.
Messing.
Ugh, don't bring that thing up.
Who does she
not
support?
In my house.
Is she Mayor Pete?
I don't know. I mean, we know her storied history with Susan.
Six seasons, yo.
I'm sure Deb is Elizabeth Warren.
Six seasons.
Wow. That shows you how out of the game I am. We're not going to sing that song again, but Jane Lynch, I mean, she was the Miss Hannigan replacement. I mean, no tea, no shade, but, like, I don't think she could.
Yeah, do you know she replaced Katie Finneran? Let's not get it twisted. It wasn't a star-fucking
exactly
contest. It was James Lapine.
Exactly.
Well, she was a bigger star than Katie Finneran.
Well,
she,
totally.
No, she was stunt casting.
She still
she was stunt casting.
Stop saying that. Stop saying stunt casting. What is that? The movies I remember. Stunt casting. It's so, like, is it fatty? I don't know. It's so something. Stunt casting.
I can't.
Stunt casting.
I know who it reminds you of, but I can't say it on camera.
I mean,
are we just going to keep doing this till your computer literally dies?
Or us, whichever happens first. I don't think I endorse Jane Lynch's Mame. She's more of a, maybe Vera.
I'm so tired of hearing that. Why? Because she's gay?
No, of course not.
Not
gay. not gay. I mean, if you were saying that, I mean, it's like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if, oh God, this is, I mean, there's plenty of lesbians I would love to see as Mame.
Yeah, like who? Name one.
Leah Delaria.
Ew! She couldn't even play Vera. No, she'd be a great Vera.
She'd be great
opposite
Gooch.
Jane.
She'd be a great Gooch.
She would be a great Gooch, but she'd be a great Vera opposite Jane. Just dyke you her.
Can you imagine, like, just like a dyke Mame?
She's like, will always, you're down the octave. Will always.
The man.
No, actually, the moon. They both have fabulous alto voices.
But, yes, but Leah.
Leah can even sing soprano.
I would love
little.
To see Leah as Mame, but like in like Provincetown. Like,
keep,
like,
we keep like, on wishing. You might.
Like a Mame, but like seducing. Don't. Seducing the party guests. Anyway. What are we talking about? I'm like crying. My computer has 5% still.
This is like Hanukkah, but the bad version.
It's like we're just like running down the clock. do we have anything else to talk about? Are we subjecting?
Do I have more about Mame? I might have more about Mame.
Not Mame.
Well, but especially about Mame.
I feel like I'm kind of done with Mame.
Oh, you are. Well, today. I think Adam Roberts and Dublin Zotrope might like to hear more.
Oh,
those are our two VIP listeners.
VIP listeners, I feel like everything I do for Dublin Zoe.
Yeah, totally.
Everything I do. Da, 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 da. What is that?
I thought you were going to do everything I do it for Dublin Zotrope.
No, it's, what's the song thinking of? Da 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 da. Da, 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 da.
Everywhere I go, you'll be all the world is only you.
Yes.
And me.
What is that?
Tonight from West Side Story.
Yes. Yes.
He didn't recognize it without the film projections. Without that H&M wardrobe.
Without Isaac Colin Powell. Isaac Mizrahi Colin Powell. Oh, another Mayor Pete, or not Mayor Pete, another Mayor Mike supporter who I can't get behind, Isaac Mizrahi.
Oh, I don't give a fuck who Isaac Mizrahi supports.
Although we did used to go to the same gym. The 3 months I went to the gym back in 2012.
By that logic, I would be supporting Elizabeth Warren.
Wait, what?
Oh, I am supporting Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, right.
Well, that's a good logic then.
All right, well...
This is definitely over.
Definitely over.
I would bet a lot of money that what we're saying right now will not make it into the air.
Right. Ah, ta-da-na.
This is all like right. That thing in Spaceballs.
What thing?
That thing.
Oh, yeah, I love that thing. I love Spaceballs.
Didn't we watch it together?
Yes, and History of the World, which makes me think of Madeline, who I love, and makes me want her as Mame. Anyway, we could go on and on and on about this, but truly...
By the way,
we're truly
Nancy Anderson for Gooch. Okay, I'm done.
We're truly a broken record at this point. Oh!
Can't work like that.
Let's talk to Nathan Lee Graham, a true star.
You know what? I want to have Nancy on the pod.
Mame for the ages. Okay, Jane, we'd like to have Nancy on the pod.
Broken record.
With the amazing Nathan Lee Graham.
Hello, everyone.
Yes. Hi, he's here. Oh my God, I love you so much.
This place we're in is quite lovely. We're on the 40th floor.
Well, we could say we're on any floor. They don't know. We're on the 80th
floor.
Well,
I like to tell the truth. And I'm looking out over the Hudson.
Oh, yeah. We have a corner room here.
It's lovely.
Well, what Nathan's looking at can only pale next to what I am looking at.
Oh, you're too
Nathan
kind.
Nathan Lee Graham, beautiful and fabulous.
Thank you.
Well, you turn any room into a party.
Oh, my
and,
God, that's right.
Any party into your room. And well, live for it.
Perhaps I should have had some alcohol.
You make me feel like I'm still drinking and partying. It's always a good time.
Oh, you don't imbibe anymore.
I don't anymore. Mm. Yeah.
All right, that's
it's
fine.
Good. It was. Edward Albee said something like every man should drink a certain amount in his life, and I got it out of the way early.
Beautiful, wonderful. Because there's plenty of people still drinking.
Yeah,
so.
There are. I'm not worried about the future of the alcohol industry. But I love the industry of Nathan Lee Graham. That's what
you.
I'm all about.
Yes,
and I'm so psyched that you're talking about Lena Horne.
Yes, yes. My dear one.
I mean, and you know, I have a DVD to give you if you don't bring it, but and you probably already have it of The Lady and Her Music.
Oh yes,
of course.
I actually have a VHS tape. Of it as well.
Oh yes, we were just talking about VHS.
You know, this woman had a 70-year career. So mm-hmm. by that time, when she did Lady in Her Music, it was
81.
Yeah, so 40 years practically already.
I knew that it had been a huge triumph for her and a big hit on Broadway. I didn't realize it ran for over a year.
Yes, doing that show for over a year.
Can you imagine?
With my dear friend Marva Hicks.
Yeah, it was a big production.
Yeah, big production. Linda Twine, who also was the musical director for The Wild Party.
Bringing it into the Nathan story. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's go back in time.
Oh my
to
God! 19.
Did you become aware of that when it happened, or was that something you discovered later?
I was aware of it when it happened. I was young.
Yeah, but, sure. Well, I'm sure, like me, you were aware of her in The Wiz. At least, of course.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, The Wiz was the first musical that I'd ever done. I did the national tour as a munchkin in Los Angeles with Under the Shield. So it was my first
goodness. Yeah. Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Well, you know, I think you should be going in after Andre into Hadestown. Although I thought that before, then I saw Moulin Rouge and I thought you should be going into that after Danny Burstein.
I agree.
But I'm sure there's original things cooking.
I'm looking forward to a revival of Mame myself.
Totally. Wait,
so are you, I assume you want to be Mame, or are you?
Of course.
Because you would be sort of like the Vera to end all Veras.
Well, you know what? I do like both roles.
Yeah. And who would you want to do it in rep with, switching parts?
Judy Elaine Stritch.
Yeah.
I don't know, because there's so many people, right? And they could be any gender.
Well, you don't have to. You don't have to just choose one. Just shoot. Who are some people you would like to do a meme rep role switching journey with?
Well, I think Billy and I would do great.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
Because
we
have so much fun working together when we do work together. Yeah. So, that would be lovely. We'd kill that.
Oh my God.
Listen, who do we have to call? I mean, that... Okay, so this is...
I mean, I feel like we should, like, copyright that idea or something. Because anyone listening is totally going to steal that.
That idea is the property of Broken Records Podcast. Now, if in the Nathan Billy meme, who is Gooch?
Oh, God.
Mm.
That's hard. Because that's such a great role, too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll have to... I'll come up with it by the end of the podcast.
Now, I've been recently having, like, a deep dive into Mame.
Yes.
I mean, I'd always loved the movie Anti-Mame and the Broadway cast album with Angela, and I've never seen a production.
Robin de Jesus.
Oh, genius.
Wonderful.
Done.
Wonderful.
Cut and print. I recently read the novel for the first time, and then the sequel, and now I'm reading... the biography of Patrick Dennis and his other stuff, and this book I found about the productions over the years.
It's just such a wonderful piece.
So Daniel thinks it's Rosalind problematic.
Russell. Well, I love Rosalind Russell too.
Yeah,
so she's
the greatest.
A huge, so good.
Roz.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of her.
Huge. But Daniel thinks that the show is problematic.
I don't really know the show, but I went to the Jerry Herman Memorial, and they sang the title song Mame, and I thought it was so thrilling, and you know everyone gave it a huge applause. But when you really hear the lyrics out of context, it's like, I'm like, is it glorifying the South? Like, what do you think?
Well, you know, you have to think of things when they were written and why, and at the time. And... you coax the blues right out of the horn, Mame. I always think there is a tongue-in-cheek in everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's a wink-wink, nudge-nudge, mm-hmm. even in that piece as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on how you play it.
Yeah.
Really. Mm-hmm. It depends on how you play it.
I mean, I guess there's two... Well, first of all, I think I probably can speak for everyone on Earth when we say that if you, let alone you and Billy, were doing Mame, we would be very trusting that people
Absolutely.
With the right
yeah.
sensibility and, you know, wouldn't go wrong. But I do know sometimes, you know, from when you take a piece, sometimes you go into something that might have some prickliness, but you're going to have the right point of view and mm-hmm. it's all going to work out. Sometimes, though, when you start to do that, the threads come apart and you realize the thing doesn't, it only exists in that. But you don't think Mame would be something like that.
Well, you have to trust the material, but also if you're going to revive something, then have something to revive. So,
right.
I think if you have the right combination of people and the right interpreters, then you can make things work. And if it doesn't, then you don't do it.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Well, so maybe we'll start with a workshop and we'll figure out all the questions. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. I mean, Daniel keeps bringing up the title song, which obviously is this stuff about the South. That I never worried about because those characters are kind of the butt of the joke in a way in the show. And Mame is all about, you know, that 1960s sensibility.
Yes,
of
and being very progressive.
Civil rights and progressive, yeah. And she doesn't like the anti-Semitic right. people and all that. But the thing I've heard people talk about is the character of Ito, that is that this sort of like dated stereotypical portrait of an Asian American, and you know of course Alec Mappa would tell you absolutely not, give him the chance, he'll show you that it can be done with dignity.
Well, and Alec should do it. And yeah. the thing about it is,
I think we just finished casting yes. your production,
my dear friend Alec. The thing is that. Asians exist, hello everyone, mm-hmm. and they should be in everything as well.
Yeah.
So, Ito should not be cut, he should just be respected.
Yeah.
And same thing with at Breakfast at Tiffany's when Mickey Rooney played yeah. that horrible.
Oh, God.
You know, you don't cast yourself, but you do accept the role. So, all of those things, all of those Asian characters
yeah.
should exist, but they should be respected and lauded and applauded just like everything else.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, so then on these issues, I mean, it's very appropriate to talk about Alina Horn in terms of these things.
Sure.
Because
mm-hmm.
she's someone who not only had to really struggle with that inequality and prejudice and everything personally and very much professionally.
And also the way she looked.
Yes, well, because because there's so many different movie versions of Showboat, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, coming, as we all have, decades after it had happened, you know, I'm sure my grandparents were like, no, it's this movie with this,
right.
that's the real one, you know, but to me, it's just like, oh, there's several different versions, which are the real ones, so I was shocked to see that Ava Gardner had played mm-hmm. Julie, and that Lena never had, because it seemed to me mm-hmm. like if there was one part Hollywood owed Lena Horne, it was right. Julian Chauveau.
Well,
for
and
crying
because
out loud.
Until the clouds roll by, she sort of simulated
right.
the role of yes. Julie,
because that was mm-hmm. the biography of Jerome.
Yeah,
Kearns.
I recently yes. watched yeah. that. Yeah,
she just assumed that they were sort of prepping her for that,
yeah.
and she should have assumed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, with her light Egyptian makeup made by Max Factor, but that was not to be.
Yeah.
Well, she talks about that in the show, too.
Yeah, indeed she does.
I thought when I sang that song, and I think the picture was called Till the Clouds Roll By, I thought that I was going to be Julie when they finally decided to make the motion picture Showboat. I was wrong, of course. But it was okay because one of my girlfriends got the part. I didn't have but about two at that time, but I liked her. She was a nice, southern, white girl, born in North Carolina. Yeah, around a whole lot of dirt, poor, sharecropping, black and white folks. So she and I had a whole lot we could talk about together.
And then when you get to the Showboat that I did with Hal Prince and Susan Stroman, of course, mm-hmm. Lynette McKee.
Yes.
And my dear Valerie Pettiford. Then the role is cast properly.
Yeah.
You know, for
yeah.
the miscegenation to actually happen
yeah.
in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you were, like, a kid getting into, like, Lena Horne, like, how much of that came into your consciousness?
The thing is, singular people I'm always drawn to, and I was thinking about this, there's so much fear about being singular today. Mm-hmm. There's much more... people are much more inclined to find sameness in how we sort of relate to each other because we're alike.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just the opposite. I'm always drawn to people who are singular and sort of unique.
Mm.
So my earliest influences were these powerful men and women, mostly women, because they could be freer. People like Judy Garland, Eartha Kitt, Lena Horne, Angela Lansbury. All of these people were so singular and looked... Mm. like themselves, if
yeah.
you understand what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, they weren't sort of cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was naturally drawn to Lena because here is an African-American woman who looked the way she did, but sounded the way she sounded and was willing to contort and make herself seem beautifully grotesque at times and menacing.
Mm.
As a way of social activism through her art.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know all of those words when I was younger, but I certainly felt what was happening. And I knew that there was some sort of arrested development within me that made me... I was drawn to her like a moth to a flame. And I just liked the way she did things. I liked the way she said things, her phrasing. Mm-hmm. I understood things. And even when I sing today in my shows, people always comment on my diction. And I never thought that it should be anything but. I said, well, if I'm telling a story and you don't understand what I'm saying, what's mm-hmm. the point? Mm-hmm. But the people that I listened to growing up mm-hmm. had impeccable diction, and they really sort of leaned into these words in a menacing, beautifully menacing sort of way. And I love that. I love that about all of them, but particularly Lena, because she looked the way she looked, and she could have chosen many routes to go. Mm-hmm. Yes, limited because of being an African-American here in these United States, but at the same time, she was so beautiful that, you know, I'm sure that put her in a box at times, even amongst her own.
Yeah.
And same thing with Eartha, you know, I believe that's why they both were so unique in their own ways, because they had to sort of fight against what they looked like too, you know, to carve out something where she was just not some pretty little, you know, ingenue, and really sort of be this full-throated woman. I really was drawn to that very early, mm-hmm. and those were my big influences, and she was definitely a pillar for me as to how to perform, even, mm-hmm. and how to be performative, I should say.
Yes.
And
yeah.
What were the Lena other albums or movies? What were your Lena touchdowns?
Lena Goes Latin is so good, and Lena mm-hmm. in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Those, if you don't really know her stuff, those two albums, I think, are quite good, and it will lead you down the primrose path to get more into her.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way.
And then, of course, you know, Vincent Minnelli film, I think he did Cabin in the Sky. Mm-hmm. I think. I might be getting that wrong. I apologize. I think so. And then, of course, Stormy Weather. I mean, those were her two sort of breakout, full-throated films. And then, of course, like she said in A Lady and Her Music, they would put her in all of these films, all of these musicals, but in such a way where the film could be taken, she could be cut out when it was taken down to the South, when the film was taken down to be shown in the South. And so she would have a lot of these sort of look pretty, pretty mouth, stand alone singing numbers in wonderful musicals by MGM that she would do. But unfortunately, she could never really get more than that because of the times.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, because of the racism. Mm-hmm. So, there was that.
When you were growing up and listening to those stories on the album Lady With Her Music, on the video, and was that... encouraging to you to think, well, look, you know, things have changed somewhat since then? Or was it just sort of more bad news?
It was encouraging to me, particularly a person like me that didn't fit in as well into any sort of mold. I was sort of, for lack of a better phrase, mainstream. I wasn't a part of black. I haven't been a part of black Hollywood or black Broadway specifically. Mm-hmm. I've always been sort of mainstream in that kind of way. Even though I still have my fringe cred, I hope. For some reason I fell into just a sort of multi-medium platform. Mm-hmm. I have no idea why.
Well, you, I mean, to the word you used for Lena and Eartha and Judy and Angela, I mean, singular is 100,000% you. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I don't think I can call myself that, but I certainly strive to be in that company. Mm-hmm. That's where my bent is. Mm-hmm. And so recognizing that very early and embracing it instead of running away from it, because I did try to run away from it. I tried to be in the chorus so many times. I tried to fit in and blend in and just be one of the guys, if you will, so at the time.
Tell us about that. I mean, what you're talking about, just like the beginning of your career.
Well, yes, but I think people like Lena, Eartha, Judy helped me realize who I was early. Because I just was naturally drawn to them. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't trying to copy them per se.
Yeah.
But I was doing my version of them all the time through my lens. Mm. And eventually that became who I was. Mm-hmm. And my sort of version of whatever it is I do. Yeah. So I'm always astounded when people say that, oh, I like the way you've done that, or... Because that's just naturally how I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I see the phrase or I hear the phrase or I see the line, and that's just how it comes out. Mm-hmm. I'm not so calculated. I mean, you know, one hopes one is talented. but, you know, it's really sort of... And then I think about my contemporaries that are also influenced by certain people, and it makes sense to me. I don't feel as strange now. You know, when I look at someone like Jennifer Lewis, who I just adore, mm-hmm. I don't feel as strange when I see their influences as mm-hmm. well. So she was a big influence in that way. And also, this is key. I really do believe in some kind of social activism through art. And sometimes you don't have to be on a picket line or, you know, being thrown into jail in order to support the cause, the resistance. Mm-hmm. And I believe that all the women that I've brought up recently do just that through their art. There's something pleasantly irreverent about it. And they really sort of speak through their art, even if they're singing something that can be completely like, you know, some wonderful Lorenz Hart song that's seemingly... You know, just very light and, you know, not very political.
Like Bewitched.
But it becomes that.
Yeah.
Because of the way that they put it over.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I've seen a lot. I mean a lot. But now I'm like sweet 17 and I'm bewitched, bothered, and bewildered. Am I? Yes. I wanna sing to him each spring to him and worship the trousers that cling to him, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered am I.
I don't know why I said bewitched.
Bewitched. Bewitched, bothered, and bewildered.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching a clip on YouTube of Lena singing Being Green,
yes.
The Kermit song, and the way she performs it, it takes on this whole new meaning, and you're like, whoa, like this is like philosophical.
And you know exactly what Being Green means after she sings it.
It's not easy being green. It seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water. Or stars in the sky. But green.
I think everyone that has sung it since then has her take on
in
it
mind.
In mind.
Yeah,
I mean,
like
Mandy Patinkin and Audra McDonald, for sure, they are doing a second generation of Lena's interpretation.
Yes, and the lady in the Lady is a Tramp.
Yeah,
this is a brilliant song, first of all, because of all of these sort of. I mean, it's a song completely about irony, but also about being yourself.
Yeah.
And being irreverent. Mm-hmm. And it's so clever. You know, I go to opera and stay wide awake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I like a prize fight when it's not a fake. I adore the rowing on Central Park's lake. I go to opera and I stay wide awake. That's why the lady is a tramp. Yes, I like to green, green grass under my shoes. What can I lose? I'm fast asleep. I'm all alone when I lower my lamp. That's why the lady, that's why this here lady. I don't know about all you other ladies out there, but that's why this lady is a man.
That's revolutionary to me.
Totally. Yeah.
So, especially if you can put it over the way
I think
that it
about that
be.
So much. I remember I used to go when I was like younger and more impression. Not the right word, but I would go to like a Patti LuPone concert, Carnegie Hall, and I would be screaming my face off, and there would always be like old rich white people who like drove in from Long Island like giving me dirty looks or even telling me to be quiet, you know. And I remember thinking like, you're a fucking subscriber. You don't give a shit about this performance. You're here. Your energy is like bringing the room down, and I am like who this is for,
right?
You know? And I think about it so much with the lyric you mentioned, because it's like we have the box at the opera, and it's just like you know, they fall asleep because they had too many scotches at the club before,
and it's all about having season tickets as opposed to seeing who that is.
Yes, you know, or Daniel who's going in the $30 family circle and like obsessing over the libretto and learning every opera. You know, that's the tramp, because he's not that society status thing, you know. Yeah.
But it's such the clever way of doing it, the flip side, the sort of oxymoron of the tramp, and you know, you either get it or you don't.
Yeah.
And they got it.
Yeah.
And I got it very early. So it was a lonely childhood at times. But because I understood so many things before I was supposed to. Mm. And I also knew that if I could survive, if I literally could survive, that everything would be okay. Mm-hmm. Because I've always been the same person. It's just that I've grown into it. Mm-hmm. But I knew very early who I was, and I just keep becoming.
Mm-hmm. What were the, like, not tent poles, but, you know, what were the posts, the signposts where you were like, okay, I've come into this much more. You know, what were the things that you did or that happened to you where you felt a sense of coming into that? And
well, one of the biggest things was I never was in the closet. Mm-hmm. So, because I had a wonderful teacher, Susan Gregg, who asked me very early on in conservatory, she said, do you want to lie now and keep lying, or do you want to tell the truth and be brilliant? Mm. And I said,
we knew what she was voting for.
You know, basically. And she was like, well, if you just tell the truth about yourself now, we can actually get to straight to acting. But if you don't tell the truth, you're going to have to double act, because you're going to have to act like what a straight person would act doing this.
Yes.
And then you're going to have to legitimize, you know, you're going to have to say to yourself, oh, the only legitimate way to act is if you act straight roles and if you act like a straight person when you're acting, and that legitimizes you. She said, now, I don't feel that way, but you have to be daring enough to say that you don't want that either, so that what we're learning here can actually permeate and you can really get what you need. And I decided very early, not knowing all of the trappings of that and how difficult it would be, to go with the latter, just go with being myself. And so I felt weird at times. I knew that I probably wouldn't work as much. But in doing that, it was one of the best things I've ever done, because that was a huge milestone, post, whatever you want to call it, at that time. And I did it very early when I was a freshman in conservatory. And as a result of that, my work just got better and better and better and better and better. And I didn't worry about such things. Although my contemporaries really did give me a hard time, because even at that time, this is the early 80s, mid 80s, late 80s. Late 80s? Yeah, late 80s. I started coming to New York in the early 80s. That's what it was. This is the late 80s when I was a freshman. And, you know, everyone's still in the closet. Yeah. You want to get hired? You have to, you know, you can't do this. And I just thought, no. And then, of course, cut to the year 2000. I still hadn't played anyone gay. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't get hired.
Yeah.
They would say that I wasn't gay enough, because I was just a normal gay person.
Yeah.
So I didn't come in with feathered boas and all this stuff. They said, you're just so elegant, but we need someone who's a little, you know, indicative. I was like, well, I don't know anybody like that.
Indicative.
Unless they're being performative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember sitting with an agent at Writers and Artists, and I had just done a scene from Does a Tiger Wear a Necktie? And this guy is, you know, jonesing and on drugs or whatever. And I sat down to talk with her afterwards, and she goes, oh, I said, what's, you're nothing like the character you just played. I said, no, I'm not a drug addict, dear. She goes, and then she wrote, I saw on her desk, she wrote a little light in the loafers. Light in the loafers is what she wrote.
Wow.
And it, you know, the letters got really huge to me, like Dark Victory when Betty Davis sees Prognosis Negative. And I took it. It hurt. It hurt me. But I took it. And I thought, well, let me try to adjust. And there were many years of me trying to make people feel more at ease, you know, with my presence. And then finally, you know, over years and years and years, I just said, fuck all that shit. I'm not trying to dim anyone's light, but I'm certainly not going to turn mine off. Mm-hmm. And if I know the answer, I'll allow for a few moments for someone to come up with it. But eventually, I'm just going to have to give you the answer.
Yeah.
You know, so, 'cause it makes life so much easier. I know the answer. I know how to do this. So let's just, you know, I don't always want to be the one with the answer. Mm-hmm. But if I happen to be the one with the answer, I'm going to answer the call. So that was a huge windfall for me in school, to just not be in the closet mm-hmm. at all. Once you take away that, that sort of fear, no one could really hurt me with it. Right. It was no longer a weapon.
Right.
And so when people would say, well, now what I couldn't do was change my color. And that continues to be a source of uncomfortable angst. I used to joke and say, what did I used to say? I said, I don't mind being black. It's just damn difficult at times. Because I'm a part of a small fraternity of men who do certain roles. And I'm usually the only one of color.
Yeah.
That's expanding now, I'm happy to say. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, it was not. I mean, literally, I would go in with Leslie Jordan and, what's his name? Very tall. Victor Garber. Mm-hmm. Can you believe this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
We would be up for roles, together.
I mean, it's just so funny, but I can see how you and Victor Garber could play the same part, how you and Leslie Jordan could play the same part.
So you can see it's just like, those things would actually happen.
Yeah.
And continue to happen, but I had to sort of reconcile myself to it, because I also felt like a jack of all trades at that point, because I was in every medium.
Yeah.
But each time I was in the medium, I seemed new to the people who were there, who only did that track, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And finally, I said to myself, Nathan, how about this? How about you're a master of all of them? Mm-hmm. And you just go from one to the next, and that's what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. So.
Well, that's what everyone wants to do nowadays. Anyway,
I guess. I mean, you know. I'm on my own track, though.
Yeah.
I think if I have any advice for anybody, is that you have to sort of become comfortable with your own track right away.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really have lots of advice for young performers except show up on time, hit your mark, and know your lines. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
But you would be amazed.
Yeah.
How those precepts, how those concepts do not get through. Mm. Bitches show up and they don't know their lines. Mm. They don't hit their mark. They're rude.
Yeah.
They're calling out. Oh, I'm out. Calling out?
Do you think that comes from a certain, is it just laziness, or is it some sort of like, you know, self-sabotaging, like, oh, I don't think I can do this, so I'm not going to put forth the effort. Like
The self-sabotage, I think, is not as much, mm-hmm. because to self-sabotage means that you care. It means that you really want this to the point of where you're actually putting in something. So you sort of self-sabotage yourself by caring too much. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of an entitled laziness, mm-hmm. more than anything else. Oh, I'll get another job. Or do you realize mm-hmm. how difficult it is to be in the radius of these few blocks to get a Broadway show, or to get a really wonderful off-Broadway show where so much great work happens, mm-hmm. or to be on national television? You know, I'm always amazed when people say to me, oh, Nathan, you're, I can't wait to see more of you. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm on this TV show. Well, I mean more of you on the show. No, that's enough. What you see is enough. I'm happy with it. You should be happy with it too. The writers want to write more for me. They want to develop more for me. Great. Mm. Do you know how difficult it was to land that job? Mm-hmm. Mm. Are you on television? Have you ever been on television? No. It always kills me when people talk about pilot season, which doesn't even exist anymore to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, with all the streaming. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I would look at people sort of incredulously, but why are you talking about pilot season? Mm. You don't do pilots. Mm. It's pilot season. Yes, it is. It's also Hanukkah and Christmas. But, I mean, so, pilot season. Give me a break. Anyway, no, nothing, you know, it just kills me. You know, when you're out here busting your ass and people are sort of, you know, whatever. I mean, Priscilla, the wonderful and talented James Brown III, who played Jimmy in Priscilla, mm-hmm. Queen of the Desert, at the Palace. Oh, I love playing the Palace. And
until you play the Palace, right? You haven't played the town.
Exactly. And he understudied Misunderstanding, which is the role I played. And he said to me once, Nathan, I've never not gone on for my understudy, you know, as an understudy, I've never not gone on. I said, I'm sorry. Because, you know, I just don't call out.
Yeah.
So I did every one of those performances. I think it was 645.
Wow. Goodness.
Yeah.
Was that the longest run you've ever done?
On Broadway, yeah.
Yeah.
But not on tour.
What did you do longer on tour than that?
Oh, what did I do? I did Showboat for 3 years.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, Hal Prince told me to quit.
Oh, yeah. Tell us that story.
Well, he just told me, he said, I think you're wasting your talent and you're just afraid that you won't work, so you should leave the show. And so after the Kennedy Center performance, I did leave, but I think it also coincided with the end of the tour. It just mm-hmm. so happened that it
yeah. was. Mm-hmm.
But he did tell me that. He was very, very kind mm. to, you know, to notice me in the chorus. And
yeah. Mm. How could anyone not notice you?
Well, and Susan Stroman was very nice, too. Mm.
I mean, I'm surprised you were even able to work in the chorus.
Well, they kept, certain things kept being mentioned, like I was one of the stevedores. Mm-hmm. Right? And so they were like, is that belt cinched? I said, no, it's just closed, like everyone else's belt. This is a loop, this is a hole, and it's closed. I literally was not trying to look cinched. Different. No. But they were like, your belt seems cinched. I think, what was it, Florence Klotz?
Flossie.
Yeah. She's like, his belt is... Why do you look glamorous? I literally would get notes on it. I'm like, I have on the same slave-ass costume that everyone else has on. Cotton Blossom! You know? So
you just have a jaunty figure.
But I was like, bitch, these are the clothes you gave me.
So it's how you were wearing them, you know?
I was like, I have on flannel and heavy wool, you know.
I love that.
Well, these houndstooth pattern pants. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway. I did the show too long. But whilst I was doing the show, we did tons of cabarets all over the country.
Yeah.
Including Canada. So I got to hone that skill.
Mm.
You know, my supper club skills.
Mm. Would you... You need to be doing more of that.
I do. I do. I will.
On the way here, like listening to Lena, I was like, I would love to see just like a night with Nathan Lee Graham.
Well, you know, I will do more of them. It's just that other work has been taking precedent.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it takes a lot of energy for me yeah. to do a show because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm old school with the shows and Eartha.
It seems like it would take a lot of energy for you to do anything. I mean, I think that you're someone who doesn't do anything half-assed.
Right, right.
And when, you know, you come correct and you do your homework and you always are, you know, 100%. And
I try to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, even if I wanted to quit the business, which is, you know, I'll die doing this business.
Yeah.
There's nothing else I really can do.
Yeah.
I'm just not suited for anything else. I even the way I think about things seems all of a sudden esoteric and sort of, you know, eccentric. Whereas I think it's perfectly normal, but mm-hmm. when I'm talking with someone else who is a lay person,
yeah.
they're like, what the hell? So, you know, I'm certainly relatable, but it's not, I am a creature of this business now. And
yeah.
so mm-hmm. I do try to approach everything with 100%, you know, and when I don't, it makes me unhappy. But yes, I need to do more shows and, I had such great influencers as well. Mm-hmm. You know, Eartha was a huge influencer on the way I do my shows as well. And plus, you know, I would watch her.
Yeah.
And learn from her.
Talk to us about Eartha, because you're not only a fan, you got to be friends with her and work
yes.
with her and all that.
I mean, what is there to say? She was truly a mentor, truly a beacon for me.
You guys were on Broadway together in the Wild Party.
In the Wild Party, yes.
2000.
We became friends to her dying day, and her wonderful daughter, Kit, is such a wonderful person who's keeping her, the memory of her mother, alive and going very well. And so we have to celebrate Kit for that, Kit Shapiro. Eartha was just wonderful, and for me, in so many ways. Once again, very singular, very focused, extremely focused. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love, you know, all of the personal things that she would talk to me about, that, and some of the pitfalls that I would find in my life if I remained singular myself, which she thought I was, which she said to me. So, you know, I'm just not sort of making it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think about those things, and some of them I want to come true. Some of them seem terribly lonely. But, you know, she basically would say things like, you know, when you're a person like us, me, you have to have someone strong, someone who challenges you. And that's hard to find, and you probably won't have many. Mm. And so... And even when you do, you have to do what you have to do alone. So.
So, I mean, you do seem like someone, you said she was very focused, and that's how I think of you as being, as someone who's very focused and dedicated, but also you still somehow maintain this enthusiasm without getting burnt out. Like, how is
somehow,
that?
Somehow. And
is
not
that
bitter.
Possible.
I think because I actually love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's helpful.
Yeah.
I'm actually, when I enter a room or... a theater or a supper club or anything, I always come in with my arms open to embrace whatever is happening. So I actually am excited about other performers as well. I think that's a way not to become embittered.
Mm-hmm.
I actually love other people's work, and especially when they put in 100%. I think that's a large reason why I'm not sort of crazed.
Mm-hmm.
I also shut out all the noise, and I keep to myself. I love a little anonymity and privacy. I am very old school when it comes to a little mystery about the performer. I don't like to see people before performance to break the illusion. I like all of that sort of thing, and I think it's fun. I think it raises the stakes and makes life a little bit more enjoyable. I do hate when people say, Nathan, looks like you're having a lot of fun, or this must be so fun. No, no, no. This is not fun. It's enjoyable. Words matter. Adults enjoy their work. It's not fun. Kids have fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Because fun implies like frivolity.
Yes. Or non-seriousness. Whereas enjoying something means that you put in some effort, and the fulfillment, the enjoyment that comes from it is wonderful and euphoric. So yes, I enjoy what I do immensely, but it's not fun, ladies and germs.
Well, that's some, I mean, going back to what you were saying about all these young performers and kind of the laziness and the entitlement, I mean, do you think a lot of it is they expect something just to be a lot of fun and a party, and instead of it actually
I think so,
you're dedicating yourself to?
I absolutely think so, Daniel. I think that they're expecting, you know, the glamour part of it all the time and the fame part of it. I remember it very distinctly when I was a kid saying to my mom, when I realized that I wanted to do this as a profession, there was no spark, there was no pivotal moment where I saw something and thought, oh, I need to be on stage. I was always on stage, either at school or in church. I was always singing, always acting. That's just the way it is. I come from a family of teachers and preachers. That's what it is. Okay, but when I made a decision, a concerted, is that the right word? Decision to make a living at this, I said to my parents, specifically to my mom, I said, I would like to be a working actor. I said those words.
Wow.
And I went to Webster University Conservatory, and their whole theme is the working actor. So I went to the right school for that. I was already prepped to do off-Broadway, regional, Broadway,
yeah,
concerts, that was the whole thing, to work. Mm-hmm. And that's my whole work ethic. Some jobs are more high profile than others, but I approach them all the same. Honest to God, I do. Mm-hmm. And so then when people don't show up on the other end, on the creative end, for me, it pisses me off.
Yeah. Mm.
Because I'm going to show up, you know. Even if I'm giving you my 90% show, it's someone else's 100.
Yeah, at least. What about when you first started, did you do other stuff to support yourself while you were, you know, before you got Showboat and all that?
Okay, like, so I've never had a job where I had to fill out an application.
Right, yeah.
Other than nothing.
Right.
And perhaps in high school I did like a month of something because my parents wanted me to... Mm-hmm. To buck up and, you know, do some, you know, let's see if you can punch a time clock. Mm-hmm. So maybe I did a stint
but
there.
Not after school.
No. And I didn't even do that because I had too many extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. But my dad really was the one who wanted me to, you know.
Yeah, right.
My mom's like, what are you talking about? He has no time. So no. I mean, I did some sample sales. But all the wonderful sample sales, and I'm going to do a shout-out to Soifer and Haskin, Frida Soifer and Richard Haskin. They have the best sample sale company in New York City. Mm. The best. Soifer and Haskin. They're so wonderful because they would hire all these wonderful performers who they would let out to go audition. So I was out of there more than I was in. But what was so great is that I could get all my Christmas gifts and all of my couture and drag from the sample sales. And they had, when I say high quality, I mean the highest end. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met Donna Karen. And I've just done wonderful runway shows and the best.
And what were you doing for Soifer and Haskin?
Well, I was basically selling clothes, but I was too good at it. And yeah. They suggested that I stop.
Mm.
So, because I talked to them about it, you know, maybe permanently doing that because I'm a Virgo and this business seems completely impractical to me.
Sure.
Still does. I'm a very reluctant performer.
Yeah.
As far as that's concerned, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Why do I even have this whatever talent?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. Oh, well, I have it. So I'll just keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I did. But that wasn't to pay rent or anything. So I've only paid rent by performing.
Mm. And when you had something that was like a very steady paycheck, like Showboat, and then you would like leave that, you know, was that, I mean, that must have been really scary, you know? I mean, I mean, having never had a good job to leave, I never had to make that kind of a choice.
See, Showboat happened right after Jesus Christ Superstar, which was my first tour here, mm-hmm. that I did the first national with Ted Neely and Carl Anderson.
Well, and Irene the first Cara. National of that,
yes.
Later.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, they know. I mean, I look good, but damn. My God. I'm not Cicely Tyson.
Is that with like Dennis DeYoung?
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, wait, did I see you in that, the Universal Amphitheater?
You did.
Wait, who are you?
At that point, I might have been... because I covered a lot of people before I took over for Herod. Mm. King Herod from Larry Giroux.
Oh, my God. I wish I'd seen you as Herod.
But I was one of the priests to start off. Because that was my very first show. Like, I had auditioned 5 times for that.
What to do about Jesus of Nazareth?
Miracle Wonder Man! Hero!
Perfection!
Yes!
And I understudied Annas. And I even was a cover for Pontius Pilate. Like, I could do all of those things.
Wow.
So, but I was the first understudy for Herod.
Mm-hmm.
And it's making me jump all over the place because I don't read reviews. And my wonderful theatrical publicist, Dan Fortune.
Yes, friend of the pod. Fortune,
yes, we love him.
He sends me them, but he sends them and they're marked danger. And then I read them after a show is closed. But I just read Wig Outs.
Wow. Wait, from 2009?
Yes. I just read them.
Oh, my God.
They were good.
I bet they were. I'm still mad at myself for not seeing that.
Well,
production.
I only read them like it has to be 5 to 10 years afterwards where I can just sort of
Like distance deep archives.
Yeah. So he sends me them now,
and
but
you
I don't
file
read
it away.
But Eartha is the one that told me not to read them. Mm. So the last one I actually read in real time was Jesus Christ Superstar when I did it in NIAC with Billy Porter and Emily Skinner. Mm. And I played Herod in that production as well. And it was a wonderful production. Constantine Morales was a non-equity in that production.
Wow.
It's one of the cops. Mm.
Roman guards.
Roman guards. But they were cops then because it was 1960s.
Oh, what a cool production.
Yeah, it was really wonderful.
At the Helen Hayes Performing Arts Center?
Yes, in NIAC, New York. And I read that review, and it said, the definitive rendering of Herod.
Yes.
That was the Times.
Look out, Josh Mostel.
Wow. In the Times. Because they were so close, they came up to, and you know, with the people that were in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was lovely. But that was the last one I actually read in real time. So I'm sorry I went off on that tangent. Jesus Christ Superstar made me sort of go off on that tangent.
Well, we have to play our game with you that we play with all of our guests.
Games. Game Has time. This been interesting? Have I been babbling?
Yes. Oh, are you kidding? No, you're so
like,
interesting.
Like the last Brooke.
We're gonna have you back for parts two and...
Oh, I love parts two.
Two through 200.
We'll have a series.
We'll do a special...
Because I haven't even been silly or anything.
We'll do a special record on Fire Island.
Oh,
we'll,
I love that. Yeah. Oh, that's when I'm laid back.
Yes, laid out.
Laid back.
It's a lazy afternoon.
And the farmer weaves are weaving past the meadow cows or something.
Yeah, zooming.
Okay, so...
And the
okay.
speckled trout.
Yes.
Gotta have
moving
that speckled
upstream.
Trout. I mean,
as we dream.
Did Lena ever sing that song?
I've never sung it.
No, has Lena Horne ever?
Oh, yes,
it?
She has.
Okay, we'll insert that here in the episode.
The game is, you know, the famous game Marry, Fuck, Kill.
No, I don't.
Well, so that game would be they would give you three people and you would choose which one to marry, which one to fuck, and which one to eliminate.
Oh, how nice.
So our version,
oh, how nice.
It's a dream. Control. It's yes. perfect for a Virgo. Is Dolly Concert Kill. So yes. we'll give you three performers and you choose one to see as Dolly Levi in Hello Dolly, one to see in a peak concert, and one to eliminate. Mm.
Okay, so I have to see someone as Dolly Levi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God.
No, we're going to give you three, and it's multiple
choice. Oh, and I get to choose.
Yeah. You'll assign
oh, this is so much
categories.
Easier.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a good game.
And you're perfect for it, because it kind of writes itself.
Right.
It's Lena and Eartha
and
Judy.
Judy. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, God, I don't want any of them to be dead.
Well, the good news is they're all dead already, so you're
That's
not really
right.
killing anybody.
That's true. Okay, so someone has to be Dolly. And then we have to have a great concert.
Yeah, peak career concert.
Peak career concert, and then, oh, wow, that's hard.
This is a hard one.
This is not right.
It's not right.
I can't do it. I can't do it because, oh, God, this is not right. Okay. Okay, because we spotlighted Lena today. She can be dead.
All right. That seems all very right, democratic.
Judy would have to be Dolly.
Mm-hmm.
But in like great shape.
Yeah, for sure.
And she could do it.
Oh, yeah.
She could do it. And then I have to see a peak concert of Eartha Mae Kidd.
Yes. Mm. And just because you are an expert, what would be or what era would you say would have been a peak Eartha concert?
Oh, anything in the... Oh, God, she was at her peak for so long. Mm-hmm. And then even at the end.
I mean, I saw her at the end, and she seemed so peaked to me.
So so this is difficult. But, you know, I'll have to give a range because she was so good for so long. I'll just say late 50s, mid to late 50s to early 80s.
Thank
she
you.
Really was
Thank
that good
for
that long.
That narrow
she,
down.
She would never. She just. She killed. She killed all the time.
Nathan Lee Graham, you kill all the time.
Yay!
Yes, honey.
You are my
Dolly concert only, never a kill.
I can't believe I killed Lena twice. But she had a very long career. She was the longest.
I should be happy. Yeah. I don't think Lena's sad she doesn't get to trot out and do Dolly Levi for our enjoyment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I wonder if Judy was offered Dolly. She probably was.
Well, she tried to do Mame, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
But Dolly, she was a little earlier, so maybe they had more. But they never had confidence in Judy. They were always writing her obituaries for decades. Yeah.
But she could have done it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, we'd love to see you do it. We love you. And we're going to have you back and get all the other stories.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Nathan.
So lovely. Nathan,
love you.
You're lovely. The loveliest.
Lovely.
Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week for our chat with 2-time Tony-nominated Broadway director and actor Michael Arden.
Other upcoming guests include Gideon Glick and Charles Bush.
This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer. BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A is an ass.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.